This is the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. On demand.
What's going on, y'all? This is DJ DMD, and y'all are checking out the Brad Gilmore Show on demand right here.
What's going down? It's your homie Dope Easy, the Southeast Beast, and make sure you tune in to the Brad Gilmore Show.
Loving you. Five-time WCW champion, and you're listening to the Brad Gilmore Show.
Now, can you dig that, sucker?
On demand.
On demand.
On demand.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. And right now, I have a very special person on the phone right now about to do a little interview here. And, you know, podcasters like to look out for other podcasters. And right now on the phone, I have the host of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. He's also a contributor to Yahoo and a writer for the LayfieldReport.com. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Solid Monster to the podcast. How you doing, man?
I'm doing very well. How about yourself?
Man, I can't complain. It's a great day. Great day to be alive. Great day, some might say, to be a wrestling fan. But that's what I want to talk to you about. Now, you, let me tell you how I discovered your show. I'm a podcaster, obviously, myself. I was going, making a long drive. I was making that big commute. You know, I live in Texas here, so we have long highways, making a big commute. And I needed to listen to another podcast. All the shows, all the new episodes for that day, already listened to. So I went to the iTunes store, typed in wrestling, and your podcast came up, listened to it, became an immediate fan, already went back and started listening to all the other episodes. I wanted to ask you to start off, like, what made you want to start the Solid Monster Sounds Off?
Really, I started the show as a favor to a friend who was running a wrestling news website. And we were looking to do some original content for the site, and I thought, why not do a podcast? I didn't think it was going to be any sort of big thing. I figured, oh, I'll do it for a little while. And you know, here we are almost 6.5 years later, and I'm still doing the show, and it's bigger than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah, you know, you must have jumped into podcasting like right when it started, because that 2007-08 was kind of when it first started coming around, the whole medium.
Yeah, you know, there were plenty of podcasts before then. I don't really think it took off until much later, so I think I kind of got in on it. I wouldn't say at the very beginning, but pretty early on. I mean, now if you look around, even the wrestlers themselves, it looks like every day that goes by, you're hearing about somebody that has a different podcast, which I think is great. But yeah, I got in pretty early on in the game.
Yeah, you know, I think it seems like the Podcast One Network now is like giving every single wrestler a show since the success of Steve Austin's. Even Jim Ross launches, I think, later this week, or later this month, rather. You know, the market is kind of, if you go look in the iTunes store, I think there are more wrestling podcasts than anything else. How do you, like, differentiate your show from everybody else's?
Well, I mean, everybody has their own style as far as how they want to approach it. You know, my show is unique, I think, in that I am the only one, whereas a lot of podcasts, you have two people, three people, sometimes they do round tables. I mean, I'm far from the only person to do a solo show, but I think that's one thing that differentiates me. The other thing is we have a format that over time has been tweaked, and my audience has really grown accustomed to, where, you know, we'll cover whatever the big breaking news stories are, you know, any given week, but we'll also do reviews for all the different shows, whether it's WWE, TNA. We'll have some funny bits on the show and you know, throw in a sound effect or two here and there, but we do listener questions, which is a big hit. And one of the newer things that I started doing last year on the show was a This Week in History segment, because when I had polled my listeners and done a survey last year, one of the things that I found was they loved it when I talked wrestling history, which I'm a huge wrestling nerd when it comes to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they wanted that to be incorporated into the show on a weekly basis. And it really is one of the most popular segments of the show. So you take all that together, and it's a format that just works.
Okay, and you know, like I said, I've listened to several of your shows, and I do. I love the format. I kind of know what I'm going to get every week, which you know, sometimes people like consistency. Now, you say you're a wrestling nerd, and you talk about the history. How far do you go back as a professional wrestling fan? When did you
start watching? Well, I started watching wrestling when I was about somewhere around 4 or 5 years old. And that would have been right around, I'd say 1987 is probably when I really started watching consistently. My father was a fan. My grandfather was. So around 87 or so.
87. So who was like the biggest star to you at the time? Was it Hogan? Was Hogan your guy?
It was Hulkamania all the way. I mean, Hogan, again, growing up in New York, I've been in New York my whole life, in that Northeast area, it was always, you know, WWF. It wasn't really NWA country. So I didn't get exposed to Flair and Dusty and the Horsemen and Sting and all that until, you know, many years later. So it was Hogan, it was Andre, it was Macho Man, Jake the Snake, all those guys.
You know what's funny, what I find funny about, like, quote-unquote, like, smart wrestling fans and fans who have been, like, you know, pro wrestling fans for an extended amount of time, is over the years, your love for Hulk Hogan slowly starts to go away and turns into a little bit of resentment. Do you have that too?
Hogan's a funny one to me because, you know, Lord knows on my show I've bashed him numerous times for a lot of the stupid stuff that he said, a lot of the stupid stuff that he's done. We've heard the stories about, you know, him as a backstage politician and all that kind of stuff. Hogan, I mean, he seems like a cool guy. And I think as somebody who grew up with the Hulkamania boom, you know, in full rage, I think I still have a soft spot for Hulk Hogan. So all this talk about him maybe coming back at WrestleMania 30 this year, which I'm sure he will. I mean, many months ago on my show, I pitched the idea that he should be the host of the show. I don't know that you can really do much else with him. But I think it would be cool to see Hogan come back. I have no interest in seeing him as a full-time performer. I wouldn't say I hate the guy. I just think, you know, it's a shame some of the things that has happened to him and some of the stupid things that he's gotten himself into. I have kind of a love-hate relationship. Maybe that's the best way to put it.
You know, I have to agree with you, but Hogan's last run in TNA, to me, really soured a lot of my love for Hulk Hogan because it just seemed like, I don't know, like he was way past, you know, his prime on the mic, obviously, and, you know, that Bound for Glory match with Sting was kind of hard to watch for me. So I guess, what'd you think of his TNA run?
I think his TNA run is going to be remembered as a giant waste of time. I think he collected a paycheck. I'm sure, you know, he made out very well, him and Bischoff, but they brought Hogan in for one very particular reason, and I think that was to raise the awareness of the TNA brand and hope that, you know, Hogan had the golden touch at one time, and now he doesn't. And I think, you know, Dixie Carter and all of them kind of put all their eggs in the Hulkamania basket, so to speak, and it backfired on him because he was there for, what, 4 years? I mean, when you really look at it, what do they have to show for it? Not much. So I look at Hogan's TNA run as more of a vanity run. You know, he got himself a lot of television time. He got his daughter a lot of television time, and then she kind of disappeared. And I don't really think that it benefited TNA in any way. I think it was just a waste of time, a waste of money, and it was Hogan looking out for Hogan.
Do you think that TNA just kind of, I feel like sometimes, and you know, when TNA first started out, I was a big TNA fan, but then it just seemed like over the years, they focused so much on former WWE stars to get their new guys over when really, I don't know, I don't think there's been really, maybe you could dispute this, but I don't think there's been one WWE star that's come over there that has really made such a big impact in my eyes. You can maybe say Kurt Angle, but what do you think about the WWE stars coming over to TNA?
Well, you made a comment a moment ago about how, you know, they were bringing over a lot of WWE guys to put over the younger talent. I mean, some of them have done that. Kurt Angle, you mentioned him. But if you really look at it, I don't know that they brought those guys over just to put their own talent over. And it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, on my YouTube channel, I did a review of the AJ Styles shoot interview. AJ Styles was, you know, the face of TNA for 11 years. He left the company on not the best of terms. And he did an interview last month and talked about this. And he said, you know, one thing that he absolutely hated was they would bring over all these WWE guys, like Rob Van Dam is one guy that he had an issue with. And they would come in and right away they would put the title on them. Or, you know, when Kurt Angle came in, almost instantaneously within his first month or two, they had Kurt Angle beat Samoa Joe, who up to that point was this undefeated, you know, machine in TNA. So I don't even know that TNA's mindset was, hey, we'll bring these guys in and put our own talent over. I think they were just, hey, you know, these guys work for Vince McMahon. Let's bring them on over.
They must be good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as you can tell, that's done them a lot of good. The funny thing about it, though, is that TNA right now, and it's only been a couple of weeks, so we'll see where it goes. You know, they just finished up their European tour, and ratings for their Impact show the last couple of weeks have been up. And that's, you know, they've got kind of a positive vibe going on. They performed in front of some big crowds. But if you look at the talent that have been the primary focus the last few weeks, it's been guys like Samoa Joe and Austin Aries, you know, a lot of that homegrown talent, some of the newer guys, Magnus, that they're trying to focus on. And it's frustrating as a fan. If they would have done that 4 or 5 years ago, who knows where they may be right now, but they kind of went off the rails for a while, and, you know, they are where they are.
You know, I noticed about those TNA shows, like, overseas, and it seems like the show itself, the crowd, the whole production, everything looks better to me when they're overseas. I think they should do that a lot more. And, you know, like you said, the crowd was more into it. I mean, MVP had a huge pop when he came out as the mystery investor or whatever his title is over there. I think they should almost, because here in the States, like I'm hearing, they're not drawn. What are they drawing at house shows nowadays in the States? You know?
Well, I mean, it's not good. It depends on what market. I mean, they had some house shows recently, I think, in Alabama where they barely drew, you know, a few hundred people.
Yeah.
But they'll have, you know, they'll have other shows where maybe they draw 1,000. They don't generally do that well.
Yeah, so like, but you, the arena in the overseas looked like it was like, you know, a few thousand people. And I just, maybe they should do an extended stay in the UK next time.
Well, you know, they already mentioned that they're going to be going back to the UK next year. This is kind of their annual January-February tour. I'm sure they would love to go there more often, but, you know, there's one little tiny problem with that. It costs money, and that's money they don't have. So that's why they can't go back. And I did an interview with somebody else. We had a debate about TNA. He was an international listener of my show also and a big TNA fan, and he thought that TNA should move their base of operations overseas. And I thought that was a terrible idea. And it was funny because he actually went to one of the recent TNA shows overseas, and he sent me a tweet. He was at one of the tapings. And because I guess the first taping, like you said, very packed, very energetic. I guess the second taping, not so much. And he sent me a tweet that said, by the way, you were right. because that's true because, you know, when you're out of that market for so long and those fans are so starved for action, they're going to be more excited. They're going to go. They're going to buy tickets. I give TNA 2 or 3 months. If they were in the UK full time, those crowds are going to peter out, and it's not going to look much different than it does in Alabama. So, you know, it's nice for them to go over there once. If they could go maybe twice a year, that'd be great. But they don't have the resources to do that.
So, what do you think though TNA could do to turn it around for them? Because, I mean, there's been rumors for months now that they're going out of business. You know, so-and-so from this heavy metal band is buying the company. You know, Toby Keith is buying the company. Like, what do you think TNA could do right now to turn everything around?
Honestly, I think the key is to, if somebody came along and bought the company from Dixie Carter and the Carter family, I think, you know, they've had a stranglehold on that company, and they've run that company for so long, and they've had, what, it's going to be 12 years or almost 12 years. I you know, their track record isn't very good.
Yeah.
And I made a comment on my show recently that Impact, it's not really Impact Wrestling anymore. It's the Dixie Carter Show featuring Impact Wrestling.
Yeah.
Because this woman is all over the show. And, you know, there was a report recently from a pretty reliable source. It was in the Wrestling Observer newsletter that, you know, this whole Jeff Jarrett, Toby Keith thing, they were ready. They had a deal in place. They were going to buy TNA. And supposedly, as the story goes, the one contingency was, okay, we'll sell TNA to you. But, you know, Bob Carter, which is Dixie's father, said, Dixie has to stay on in some role as a TV character and have some degree of power. And that was supposedly the straw that broke the camel's back. And Jarrett and Keith said, you know what, we can start our own company. We don't need you. So I don't know if TNA is just a vanity project for this woman, if she's trying to get on some reality show. I don't know what her deal is. I just don't think that a Dixie Carter-led TNA is ever going to go anywhere but down. So I think it starts with new ownership, new ideas, new people in charge. Because it's not the talent's fault. They have some really talented guys, and I feel sorry for them because, you know, when I see pictures of them at a house show in a gymnasium that they can't even fill, it's kind of depressing. So I think you know, Dixie has to go. I think ultimately that's what has to happen.
Yeah, you know, I think I have to agree with you. Do you have any what are you thinking about Jeff Jarrett and Toby Keith? I know like Jarrett just released like a teaser video of his new wrestling promotion is coming. Have you heard anything more about it, or is it all in the hush hush?
It's very hush hush right now. I mean, again, there are certain reliable sources. People say, oh, the dirt sheets and all that, but there is some reliable information out there, for whether it's the Observer, the Torch, or what have you. So based on things that I've read, I don't think anything is going to happen until the end of the year at the earliest. It sounds like, you know, they're scouring for talent. They're trying to get certain deals in place. I don't know that you can start a major promotion these days without having, you know, a real solid television deal in place. So I don't know if Jarrett has a TV deal that he's working on. And one interesting wild card to watch for is the Spike TV contract with TNA expires in the fall. So I would imagine that Spike is you know, pretty happy with TNA. They still do some, you know, pretty good numbers for the network. And we'll find out soon if they lock him into a new deal. But if they don't, I wonder. You know, I wonder if Spike would drop TNA. And, you know, Toby Keith, very, you know, famous guy. Apparently he's a multi-millionaire.
Yeah.
Very, you know, successful musician. I'm sure he's you know, pretty popular in Texas where you are. And so maybe they say, you know what, we're going to go with Toby Keith and Jeff Jarrett and bring them to Spike. I don't know, but everything is being kept hush-hush. I don't think we're going to know a whole heck of a lot until later in the year.
Okay, so let's say toward the end of the year, TNA, either they finally go out of business. And I don't want to see TNA go out of business. I think the more wrestling companies out there that can maybe, you know, cultivate talent, the better, for the fans at least. But say TNA does go out of business. All right, now all these wrestlers on TNA's roster are out of the job. If you're Vince McMahon or you're Triple H, who are the guys that you signed from TNA, or do you sign anybody?
I mean, if I'm Vince McMahon or Triple H, I absolutely would want to pick up some of those guys. Do I think they're going to do it? There may be one or two people they're interested in. I mean, if the whole company goes under, I would be stunned if they didn't pick up some of those guys. But, I mean, look at a guy like AJ Styles. You know, I know he's not getting any younger, but he's one of the most talented guys out there, and they haven't even touched him.
Yeah.
So if I'm in their shoes and TNA goes down, I'm thinking guys like Samoa Joe. I'm thinking guys like Bobby Roode. Those are probably two of my favorites in TNA. Very talented guys. Austin Aries, very talented guy. They just signed the Wolves, Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards, who had a tryout at NXT, and apparently Triple H wasn't impressed. So I doubt they would pick them up. But the two guys I always think of are Joe and Bobby Roode, with Austin Aries probably in the mix. I think those are the three guys who, you know, again, Joe and Aries, yes, they're on the small side, but so what? You know, CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and these guys prove that if you've got the talent and you can talk, and God knows Joe can talk. He's done some of his best promo work on TNA television in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's a little out of shape. I mean, if you look at Samoa Joe now compared to 5, 6, 7 years ago, I'm sure, you know, Triple H would take one look at this guy and say, you know, who are you? Are you a wrestler? But
yeah,
Joe and Aries and Roode would be my top three.
I would like to see Samoa Joe and Robert Roode in WWE. I saw, I was looking on your Twitter timeline, and you said you have some interest in maybe seeing Samoa Joe versus John Cena program.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because they came up together at Rick Basement's school out in California many years ago. I think there's a documentary floating around on YouTube about Rick Basement's school, and there's footage of Samoa Joe and John Cena in the same class. So I don't know if they were friendly at the time, if they're friendly now. I would think not. So they kind of have that little bit of history there. But I just think, you know, John Cena is the quintessential bread and butter babyface. Samoa Joe is the kind of guy where, you know, if you look at him cross-eyed, he'll kill you. And I think that makes for an interesting dynamic there, where if they were going to put these two guys together in a feud, it's a fresh match. I mean, you know, we've seen John Cena face the same guys over and over again. I wouldn't mind seeing Joe versus Cena.
I think I like it. I think the fans would like it, especially like the pro wrestling fans who are like the fans of the actual art form. Now, you bring up John Cena, you bring up Daniel Bryan, CM Punk. Obviously, I listened to your show about the Royal Rumble and all the fallout with CM Punk walking out. Let's start off with CM Punk. Do you think he's going to come back to the company before WrestleMania?
Oh, it's tough. I mean, if I had to take a guess, I would think not. And he still hasn't said anything publicly. You know, his Twitter hasn't been updated. He hasn't done any interviews. I saw Colt Cabana, who's probably his best friend, I think responded to somebody on Twitter and said, it's not a work. It's a real situation. Punk is very, very ticked off. And if you look at what WWE is doing, you know, they've taken him out of the signature at the open of the show.
Yeah.
Supposedly they've contacted some of their licensees who are setting up stuff for the rest of the year. And they've said, take Punk out, put Randy Orton in. So they're making all of these different moves that make me think they're not very confident that he'll be back anytime soon. So if I had to take a guess, and I would say that if he's not at that Monday Night Raw show in Chicago on March 3rd, then most definitely he's not coming back before WrestleMania.
Yeah, but like I can't even imagine what the WrestleMania 30 card is going to look like now without CM Punk. Like I was having a hard time trying to put it together myself a little bit. I'm kind of confused where they're going with some of their storylines, but without Punk there, man, I mean that's the top top four guys in my opinion in the company. So how do you, let me ask you this: if you had to fantasy book WrestleMania 30, how would you, the Solid Monster, book WrestleMania? What were the matches you would go with? Let's talk about main events.
Well, I mean, there's two matches in particular that I would love to see, and I've talked about. One of the matches I've talked about for years on my show off and on, and I'm kind of surprised they haven't pulled the trigger yet, is John Cena and The Undertaker. I think, you know, Undertaker only has a certain number of matches left, and there are some people out there who simply will never, ever buy into the fact that Undertaker's going to lose, no matter what. I'm not one of those people, because he's had matches with people like Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and they've worked in these near falls where they kind of have you fooled for a second, so I think with the right opponent, you could have a really dramatic match. And I can't think of a more dramatic opponent for The Undertaker than John Cena, because there's so many people out there who absolutely detest John Cena. They hate this man. They want his head on a stick. And, you know, the idea that he can be in there with The Undertaker and you could do a near fall or two where people actually do buy into the fact that, you know what, here's this guy that always is put over. We're so sick of this guy. I can't believe it. WWE is actually going to have him beat The Undertaker. And, of course, I would not have that. I would not have John Cena beat The Undertaker. But
yeah.
I think it can make for an exciting match. The other match that I would love to see, and I did a whole Layfield Report column on this a while back, is Brock Lesnar and Daniel Bryan. I think the idea of Brock Lesnar with the WWE Championship, even if it's just for a month or two, is fine. He would make for a believable champion. The guy's a beast. He's a monster. And Daniel Bryan is a lot smaller. He's the underdog, and I like that idea of this whole David versus Goliath thing, where Brock is just this big bully that beats people up, and Daniel Bryan is up against this monster. You know, how's he going to win the title? And I would do the title change at WrestleMania, and I think it would make for a great moment. So those would be two of the top matches if I were booking WrestleMania.
Now, at this time with Daniel Bryan, I think a lot of wrestling fans are starting to finally kind of get burned out on Daniel Bryan, and he's still white hot right now, but do you think Daniel Bryan will burn out if the company doesn't give him the title soon?
I think he probably will burn out at some point. In a way, I think it's a testament to him that he hasn't burned out already, because this has been going on now for months and months. People thought he was going to, you know, win the title many months ago, and it didn't happen, and then they kind of demoted him a little bit with the Wyatt family stuff. He wasn't in the Rumble, which, I mean, you would have thought the world was going to implode when they didn't put him in the Royal Rumble.
Rey Mysterio has never had so much heel heat.
I feel bad for Rey. I can't believe that nobody I almost think it was a rib on Rey, like a joke, because how could they not look at this and go, okay, everybody is expecting this guy to be in the Rumble, even though we never said that he was going to be in the Rumble match. But everyone's chanting his name. Everyone just assumes he's going to come out as a surprise at number 30. Let's put one of our baby faces in the number 30 spot. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen. And this poor guy goes out there and he gets booed. Like, you would think he was some sort of dictator of like a third world country or something. And like, I think that would have been a perfect spot for a heel. Like, I mean, this would have been the ultimate troll on the fans. But you have like Bad News Barrett.
Oh, yes.
At number 30. You know, and just say, I've got some
bad news
for
you.
You know, something like that. Like, if you're not going to put the guy in the Rumble, like, that's your decision. You're not changing your mind. at least have some fun with it and get some heat on that guy, because that guy's going nowhere fast. But they put Ray in that spot, and the poor guy never stood a chance. But do I think Brian's going to burn out? If this goes on too long, yes, you do run the risk of him burning out. And the other thing also to keep in mind is, I noticed that they're going to, you know, they've got this Yes Movement thing, and I think that's going to be the big marketing gimmick on TV. They have to be careful with that too, because if people look at this and say, huh, they're starting to shove this guy down our throats like they're trying to make him corporate, you know, or something like that, they may start to resent him for it. So you know, this whole Daniel Bryan thing has been very organic. It's all fan made. I think you leave it alone. Let the fans, you know, the fans are going to, you know, keep chanting his name and get this guy over on their own. And just, you know, follow the fans. I mean, at some point, you can only tease people for so long without giving them what they want.
Yeah. Do you think there's any chance on God's green earth that they're going to put the title on him at Elimination Chamber?
Oh yeah, I think there's a chance. Absolutely. I don't think they will, but is there a chance? Sure. I could see them doing that and maybe having him against Orton and Batista in a triple threat at WrestleMania, because Orton would be entitled to a rematch, I would imagine. There's been talk of doing a triple threat with Bryan, maybe not Bryan being the champion going in, maybe he'd be a challenger. And I'm not a big fan of having triple threat matches or fatal four ways as your WrestleMania main event, but I'd probably make an exception in that case, just because I think if you put Orton and Batista out there, you're asking for trouble. I think that match, you're just asking for the mother of all hijackings on your biggest pay-per-view of the year if you don't somehow find a place for this guy in one of the top one or two matches on that show.
Would you be mad, though, if you know he wasn't in the title picture? Or do you, I'm sure the WWE Universe would be mad, but would you personally be mad if he wasn't in the title picture, but he was maybe even against Undertaker or Brock or Triple H or something of that, at least like a semi-main event? Not the title, but up there in the card. Would you be mad at that? No? Okay.
No, I wouldn't be mad. I mean, I don't know what there's to get mad about. I'm just, you know, look, they talk about how they tell stories, right? That's what they do. They're storytellers. Okay, well, let's look at the story that they started telling. They started the story in the summer of last year, and John Cena picked Daniel Bryan to be his opponent at SummerSlam, and they had this great match, and Bryan won, and everybody loved it, and then they did the Money in the Bank screw job, and they took the title away from him, which I thought was done very well. I actually thought SummerSlam, that whole thing, it was almost Attitude Era-like. Like, everything clicked, everything worked, the fans reacted the exact way you would want them to. So,
and they had everyone fooled. They had everyone fooled, because for a second when the confetti came down with Daniel Bryan's win, I was like, oh, they're not going to pull the trigger on Orton. And then Orton comes out, Triple H turn. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, the pyro went off and everything. Yeah. It was almost like they were going off the air. I thought they did that great. So the story that they're telling was, okay, this guy got screwed out of the championship, and now he's got to fight and scratch and claw his way back. And I figured, okay, so maybe, you know, at the next pay-per-view or Survivor Series or something, he'll finally get his championship back. And then he won the title, and they took it away from him again. And then that Hell in a Cell match, Shawn Michaels kicked him in the face, and boy, we see where that led to. What a great story that was to tell. I am a fan of good stories, and if they're going to tell me a story, then I want to have a satisfying conclusion. So my whole thing with him not being in the title picture is, okay, you're building to your biggest show of the year now, WrestleMania. Who has been the hottest guy in WWE over the last 6 or 7 months?
Daniel Bryan.
Daniel Bryan, exactly. So, and the fans are as into him now as they've ever been. And at some point, you've got to give them that payoff. Well, why wouldn't that payoff be on the biggest show of the year? Or maybe the Elimination Chamber? If they don't give the fans that payoff, and they just have no intention of putting the title on this guy, then that's a really crappy story that they told. So as a fan, I'm kind of offended by that, because you dragged us through the story for 8 months or however long it's going to end up being. And it's like buying a book, okay? And you're really into the story, and you're 200 pages into the book, and you get to page 201, and you see that somebody ripped the last 20 pages out of the book.
Yeah, that's a great metaphor.
That probably wouldn't make you very happy, now, would it?
No.
Yeah, so that's my whole issue. But look, if Brian's going to be prominently featured, I'm happy for the guy. I'm not angry. If he's in there with The Undertaker, you know, just like Punk with The Undertaker last year, that's nothing to be ashamed of. That's one of the top matches at WrestleMania. Look, it's a far cry from him being in a tag match like he was last year or losing in 18 seconds 2 years ago. So I'm not mad. I just want them to finish the story that they started.
Yeah, have a good payoff for the fans. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. When we get closer to WrestleMania time, I'd love to have you back on when we get a more full card and we can discuss it more. You can follow him at, you can follow the Solid Monster at Solid Monster. And what's your YouTube page?
YouTube page, my username on there is The Solid Monster, all one word. But I think if you type in the name of the show, Solid Monster Sounds Off, it'll probably come right up.
Okay, good, good, good. All right, well, appreciate you coming on, and I'll probably talk to you around Mania time.
Sounds good. My pleasure.
All right, appreciate it. Goodbye.